Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, my first guest this hour is the writer and activist Rebecca Walker, previously known for her memoir of being raised Black and Jewish and for her activist work with teenage girls and young women. Walker has walked into something of a firestorm over her new memoir, Baby Love, Choosing Motherhood After a Lifetime of Ambivalence. By family context, for those of you who don't know her, Rebecca Walker is in the activist mainstream, you might say. She's the daughter of Alice Walker, the goddaughter of Gloria Steinem, and the object of her motherly affection is her two-year-old son, Tenzin, named after the Dalai Lama. She and her partner are practicing Buddhists. But her new book about motherhood is making big waves among feminists and perhaps more than anyone among adoptive parents who feel utterly offended by Walker's comparisons between the adoptive and biological, which we'll get into. Baby Love, Choosing Motherhood After a Lifetime of Ambivalence is published by Riverhead Books. Welcome back to WNYC, Rebecca Walker.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here with you, Brian.
First, give us some context. Did you think you were writing a sweet little memoir about becoming a mommy, or did you realize you were starting some fires here?
I think I always think I'm writing a sweet little memoir about whatever the subject is. I've never really prepared for the level of controversy. For this book, you know, it was both. I thought I was writing about this very primal, personal experience of becoming pregnant and giving birth, but I also knew that I was speaking to second-wave feminists in many ways, and that I was challenging some of the ideas about biology versus culture.
So let's go down some of these things that have caused a backlash. You write that motherhood is, quote, the first club I've unequivocally belonged to. Do you really mean the first?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, other than the human club, you know, as a growing up mixed race and always being on the periphery of different racial groups, I never had a sense of pure belonging to a group. And once I became pregnant, I did have that connection to mothers, to biological mothers, and all mothers, really, around the world. It was a very striking sense of inclusion.
But can you see why feminists and other progressives might feel let down by that? Did you not unequivocally belong to the club of women, unequivocally belong to the club of feminists, to the club of activists for social justice?
Well, I've always been somewhat of a renegade in all of those communities. I mean, my first book, To Be Real, challenged the idea of a feminist, the idea that you could have one political view that could define your entire life and answer all of your questions. So I've always been someone who's been challenging from the inside the ideas of feminism and feminist community. And the same with, you know, the progressive left. I think my voice has always been one of trying to bring complexity to very polarized constructions of black and white, good and bad, right and left. I think that's my job.
And similarly, you're right that that becoming a mother is the most transformational thing you've ever done. And I'm sure a lot of parents feel that way. But as an activist who had been devoted to social transformation, what does most transformational mean to you here?
Well, I think that up until the point I had a child, I had an intellectual understanding of the way in which we are all connected and the way in which we need to preserve the earth, for instance, for future generations. But once I had my own baby, you know, biological child, I had a much more visceral, experiential feeling of urgency about the need to do the work that so many of us are doing. And, you know, it's not that I wasn't aware of it before, but now it's even more intense.
It's funny because in my experience as having, I think, a political and social consciousness before becoming a parent, I see the tug both ways. Parenthood connects me to the community in ways I never was before, and I think you were just getting at that. But it also pulls me away from the community or tempts me away from the community in new ways, because wanting what's best for my own child is sometimes in conflict with wanting what's best for the world, whether it's, you know, commitment to public schools or gentrification for your neighborhood or how taxes affect your own kids, whatever, where I could put my kids above the political values if I chose to.
Yes, you could, but that's part of the work of an activist and a true person who is grappling with all the contradictions and complexities of our contemporary life. I mean, you have to find a way to make those two things connect.
But let me push you on this. Ranking motherhood above other things in terms of a transformational experience that you may have had as an activist, as a Buddhist, the things that connect you to the outside world of social consciousness. Some people may say that they're confused. Some of these, 15-year-old girls who you counsel, or 25-year-old women, may find that confusing or even disappointing. What would you say to people who might be having that reaction?
Well, I haven't met any who have had that reaction yet, though I'm sure that I will meet some. They might be surprised, but I think that people have a fundamental affinity with the notion that bringing a human being into this world and this life, the way that all of us were brought into this world and this life, most people have an intuitive understanding that that is a very potent, profound experience that is transcendent of most things on the planet, just because of the very nature of the act. But of course, I would say, obviously you don't have to have a baby in order to be transformed. You don't have to have a baby in order to be fulfilled. You don't have to have a baby in order to realize your potential. Obviously, at this point, human beings are finding fulfillment in so many different ways. But in this book, in Baby Love, Choosing Motherhood After a Lifetime of Ambivalence, I really wanted to put my personal story out, and I really wanted to say that for me, this has been an incredible journey, and I want really to tell young women, if they want to have a child, don't miss it. And young men, too. It is a very potent thing, and I would hate for you to, because you're thinking about ideology or concerns about, how to reconcile your activism with your parenthood, that you actually miss the experience.
My guest, Rebecca Walker on WNYC, and we can take your phone calls for her at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or email Brian Larashow at WNYC.org. Her new book is called Baby Love, Choosing Motherhood After a Lifetime of Ambivalence. From what you just said and from what I read, you believe that you're delivering a message to young women that you didn't get in your generation. You're 37.
Yes, absolutely. When I was growing up, I was a daughter of the women's movement, thank goodness, because it provided me with many, many options that I wouldn't have otherwise had. But I also, with that sense of being able to pursue many different things, I was also told that pregnancy and having a baby was not so important, that, fulfilling myself creatively, professionally was more important, that because the second wave movement had a healthy criticism of the ways in which motherhood was used to domesticate and disempower women, I grew up with a very critical view of motherhood in general. So I was not told at a young age, this is a very powerful experience. You should try to plan to have a child and build a family, whatever kind of family you want to build, in the same way that you were thinking about building a career. No, I didn't get that message.
It was like, yeah, you can have a family if you want, but don't forget, you can be whatever you want to be.
Exactly.
When you say second wave feminism, you're talking about feminists of the 70s primarily?
Yes. I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about second wave, third wave. I'm considered one of the founders of third wave. Founded in the early 90s.
You have an organization by that name, don't you?
Yes, thirdwavefoundation.org. We support young women's activism and empowerment and leadership. You can find us on the web. It's a wonderful organization. I feel so proud to have been a part of bringing it into the world. But anyway, when I talk about second wave feminists, I am speaking of women of my mother's generation who did so much important work around reproductive freedom, around changing our language to be gender sensitive, around really forging the paths that allow young women of today to have the options that we have.
Your godmother is Gloria Steinem. Have you spoken to her about all this and some of the reaction to your book?
I haven't spoken to Gloria directly about it, but I'm sure that at some point we will have some very interesting conversation. I don't think that Gloria would be in any way critical of me having a baby and celebrating motherhood.
The most controversial thing you wrote, and I'll disclose right up front that I find it offensive and bigoted, is your statement that adoptive parents have some kind of lesser bond with their kids than biological parents do. How could you believe that?
Well, first of all, it's very important for me to say that that was a quote taken from the Sunday Styles piece, which I didn't say. I've never said that adoptive parents have a lesser kind of love than biological parents. What I do write in the book is that, for me, my experience of raising my stepson felt dramatically different than my experience of gestating and bringing into being my biological son. And I say it several times in the chapter that is referred to, that it's not a matter of lesser or more, it's a matter of different. And I talk about how, as a stepchild in my own family, I felt very often that my stepmother, who would say that she loved us all the same, it was very clear to me as a young person that she preferred her biological children. And the injury there was not that there was a difference in the love. The injury is that she pretended, or that she kept saying, that there was no difference. And that's what I hear a lot from the feedback from this Sunday Styles piece, which has been very interesting. You know, mostly adoptive parents, irate, angry, wounded. And then on the other side, lots of stepchildren, adoptees, who say that they have often felt that there was a difference between the way they were treated and the way their biological siblings were treated, if they had biological siblings. And that, you know, it's good to stimulate dialogue about these things. I said in an interview yesterday that in our culture, we only have one word for love. In many cultures, there are 20, 30 different words for love. All the different kinds of love have different words. And in our culture, there's just one that has to do the duty of describing so many different kinds of relationships. So I think, you know, we are bound by this limited language. And to open up the door and begin to explore the ways in which we love each other differently can be nothing but productive.
So let's open the phones to, among others, adoptive children. Have you had this experience, whether you were an adoptive child, sibling of a biological child, or whatever your situation was? Does your experience confer confirmation on what Rebecca Walker is saying? I mean, I have to say from a biological parent's perspective that I have friends who are adoptive parents. And let me take step parents out of it for a minute, because not to diss them, but that's a whole other situation. But sometimes only adoptive, sometimes mixed with a biological child. And in my experience, these are like the fiercest parents I know about their attachment to their children, because they had to go through all those hoops of the bureaucracy and expense and years of longing and persistence, not just making love with their loved one. You don't see that?
Obviously, you know, that they love their children fiercely. I've never said that the love that adoptive parents have for their children is any less than the love that biological parents have for their children. What I've said is that it's different. And I think that, of course, if you just look at the different processes by which the children arrive in their lives, they're very different trajectories. So it would make sense for there to be a different kind of love. If there was no difference, you wouldn't have adoptive children, for instance, searching for their biological parents. They recognize that there is a different kind of bond there that they are looking to find. But again, the focus on the adoptive families is very interesting to me, because primarily in the book, I'm talking about the difference between stepchildren and biological children, which obviously is a very different situation. I mention adoptive children once, but I'm really discussing in the chapter that's being referred to my relationship with a stepchild versus my relationship with a biological child.
Because you were a step-parent previously in another relationship.
Exactly. And I was a stepchild. So the fact that this has been, I'm being, attacked, or people are very, very deeply upset by this misstatement, and have sort of attached onto it as a sort of adoptive rallying point, to me is indicative that we need to have more discussions about this, because people are obviously feeling a lot of frustration about the ways in which adoptive families are being represented in the culture. And I think that's valid. And on some level, if I can serve to help this discussion continue, then I offer myself.
Rebecca Walker, my guest on WNYC. And believe it or not, folks, that is my cell phone going off. That has never happened before. because I always set it on stun, which I'm going to do right now. And we'll continue with Rebecca Walker. And boy, do we have phone calls for Rebecca Walker, as you could imagine. Her book is called Baby Love, Choosing Motherhood After a Lifetime of Ambivalence. We have adoptive children and parents, biological moms. We have a woman in Port Washington who says, this is the book I wanted to write. And others, stay with us. Brian Lehrer on WNYC with Rebecca Walker, author of Baby Love, Choosing Motherhood After a Lifetime of Ambivalence. And Lisa in Port Washington, you're on WNYC. Hello, Lisa.
Hi. I'm a huge fan of your show. I love your show.
Thank you.
And I want to say that, Rebecca, I'm also a stepchild, and I'm also a stepmother. And I'm, like, really moved to tears by the poignance of the position that we are in.
Yeah.
Because I also am a biological mother, and I have my biological mother, and I have experienced the difference between the love that I received from my biological parents and from my step-parents, and I've experienced the difference of the love that I feel for my step-kid and my own biological kids. I have three boys. My first son, my stepson, I've helped raise since before he was one. I changed his diapers. I spent countless sleepless nights walking the floors with him. And when I, and he's my first. And at the time, I never thought I could love a child more than I loved him. And later, a long time later, actually, when I had my own biological children with the same man as the father of this stepchild, I was really flabbergasted by the really, and I think it probably is biologically driven.
How old was your stepchild, Lisa, when your biological child was born?
He was almost nine. I had him in my life for 9 years. He was my only child. And
how do you think the birth of your biological child and the reaction that you had to that birth affected your relationship with your stepchild?
It was very hard on him. It was very, I mean, note that also he had a mother who was very active in his life. And, I mean, I think that, you know, he's had three parents for better or for worse, you know. We've all loved him, and our intentions were always the best for him. And I think he's had the benefit of three parents and also, you know, it's a little bit of a curse, you know.
Lisa, thank you very much. Any reactions?
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Lisa, so much. I mean, it takes courage to even talk about these things because we have been holding these feelings for so long. I had the piece that I write in the book is very similar. I parented my first son, I call him my first son, for 7 years, and I would swear to anyone that he was my son, and how dare people even ask me otherwise. And then when I had my biological child, it was just the difference was so striking. So I just want to say yes, I hear you, and I want to thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you, Lisa. Do you maintain a relationship with that stepchild?
At the moment, it's a little bit strained because of the relationship that I had with his mom. But you know, I have utmost faith that 8 years of raising a child never goes wasted.
Here's an email that says, as a child of a very dysfunctional, functional parents who told me all the things they did that tormented me were done out of love, I thought very intensely about the question of this visceral parental love. By the time I was 10, I was already firmly believing that it would be better for me to adopt because my love would be pure, more based on a love of the adoptive child as a person rather than as the flesh of my flesh, a concept which I found useless.
That's very powerful. Thank you for sending that email in. I completely understand that perspective. One of the things that's very dynamic about this book is that I write about my very difficult relationship with my biological mother, who during the course of my pregnancy did many things that were very hurtful, including tell me that after 30 years of being my mother, she no longer wanted the job. And one of the things that I talk about in the book is how difficult it was for me to choose to have a child after being a child of divorce and being injured so deeply by my biological parents. So I really understand that feeling, and I thank you for sharing it. I think many, many people in our culture and our generation feel that way.
Molly in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with Rebecca Walker. Hello.
Hello, how are you? Nice to talk to you. I grew up in a very, very similar situation as Rebecca and have followed Rebecca's writing. Rebecca, you've been a symbol to lots of women.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We're very close in age. I'm actually sitting here with my newborn son. I find what you wrote to be hurtful on a multitude of levels, coming from a lesbian relationship. And knowing that you were in that community for a number of years, and knowing that children of lesbian relationships often don't have a choice but to be a stepchild or be in relationships that are multifaceted in a certain kind of way, that you're not the birth child of both of the parents. And I felt really, really hurt and disappointed I feel like you know and have responsibility beyond it being a personal memoir. When you're writing a baby book and you are the founder of Third Wave and you're the kind of poster woman of feminism of our generation, that you have a responsibility to talk about how we can find love in these multifaceted relationships rather than the limitations of that love. Because obviously that is something that we're all confronted with throughout our lives and having to grapple with. On the other hand, I really do believe that different people love their biological children in different ways, and that remark is really from your personal experience.
All right.
I think that's an interesting statement, the idea that I, as a figurehead, should be maintaining a kind of political, ideological party line. And I think that's something that my whole career I have struggled against. It's one of the reasons that I left being a figurehead at Third Wave, the organization. And I'd like to think that really what people respond to in my work is my desire to, against all odds, tell the truth about my story, about my experience, and to then do whatever I can to support different communities. I think one of the more important aspects of this book is that there's an entire section about my relationship with my ex-girlfriend, the process through which we tried to have children together with various daddy donors and sperm donors, and on and on and on. So I have in my own way, in a very mainstream book, managed to incorporate the issues and the texture of many different experiences. And I think, you know, I stand by that. So I hope that you find something useful in the book if you read it. And if you don't, I wish you and your newborn the best.
Molly, thank you for your call. My guest on WNYC is Rebecca Walker. Her new book, Baby Love, Choosing Motherhood After a Lifetime of Ambivalence. We're getting tons of calls and emails. Our lines are full. Our inbox is always open. Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. On the biological child thing, you did write your quote, not sure. Oh, you said you would die for your biological child. Your quote, not sure I would do that for my non-biological child, unquote. So do you want to clarify to the listeners that that's about you, and it's honest of you to admit that about yourself, but you don't place that on other adoptive parents?
Sure. I mean, to me, it's very obvious because I say I. and actually, that's not what's written in the book. What's written in the book is something like, I know that I would do anything for my first son within reason. And I know also that I would do anything for my second son without a doubt, even outside of reason. You know, so the distinction is about, you know, it's not quite as dramatic as to die or not to die. But I did say that in the interview for The Times. But obviously, you know, it's a memoir. It's my experience. And, you know, I really hope that people can can use my experience to begin to talk about these very difficult issues in a way that is constructive and positive and loving toward all of us who are trying to negotiate the difficult terrain of human intimacy and human relationships.
Then why do you think so many adoptive parents who wrote into the New York Times and had letters published in this week's Sunday Styles after the article about you the previous week, or who contacted us prior, called us up in the office yesterday and said, I can't believe you're even having her on. I mean, they didn't say that when we had, you know, Richard Pearl from the Bush administration. People call up and say, you're having her on. I can't believe you're having her on. What do you say to all those people who are so hurt by the way this came out?
Well, I think it's very, you know, it's very sad in some ways that people would have such a strong reaction to something that they didn't actually read. That was a misquote or a misparaphrase in the New York Times. That people would take that after 15 years of my work, really. I have done 15 years of work supporting all different kinds of lifestyles, all different kinds of families. My last book, Black, White, and Jewish, was all about how blood is not the most important thing in relationships, that people would so quickly jump to believe that I would say something so insensitive and then be vitriolic in their response, I think made me sad. On the other hand, I recognize that we are living in a very polarized, reactive time. There's so much anger in our culture right now, and people are looking for places to put it. And, I understand people's reaction on that level, but I really hope that people can go read the book, you know, rather than responding to any one quote or statement about it.
Before we run out of time, there's a lot in your book about your relationship with your mother, Alice Walker. You're estranged, you're out of her will. You said you wanted to talk about the mother-daughter trope. What do you mean by that?
Well, one of the reasons that I included in the book the struggles that I had in my relationship with my mother is that I really wanted to stimulate more discussion about what's going on with mother-daughter relationships right now. It's something that, you know, I don't understand why none of my friends, none of the women that I know have healthy relationships with their mothers. What is going on? And I think it has to do with the mother-daughter archetype being off. That, you know, this whole model of mothers and daughters being sisters, which is something that my mother and I, my mother's, you know, paradigm was for us to be sisters, it throws the archetype of what daughters actually need from their mothers off, because daughters need unconditional love, unconditional support, guidance, etc., not things that you would expect from a sister, but things that you need from a mother. And so I'm hoping that by using my own personal experience, which was very challenging, that we can get more people talking about how to heal this mother-daughter relationship that is so troubled in our culture right now.
So here's a tough email that says, with all due respect to Rebecca Walker's integrity as a writer and human being and teller of her own story, she acts like a spoiled brat when it comes to wanting limitless apologies from her parents, whose own accomplishments made her famous at an early age and made her literary career a step up from everyone else. How about some appreciation for the privilege?
That's a very interesting email. I definitely am appreciative of my privilege, you know, and I talk a lot about, I write in the book about having privilege and the different kinds of issues that it brings up when you think about having a child. And I also, in all of my work, thank my parents for all of the work they've done. Thank the movements that I'm a result of. I like to say that I would not have been born had it not been for the civil rights movement and the women's movement. Both of my parents responded to the call of Dr. King, married in Mississippi when it was against the law. And so I really fundamentally owe my very life to those movements and to both of my parents, and I love and thank them.
It must be weird to be a public figure writing a memoir about your problems with your public figure mother. I mean, it turns it from not just self-exploration, though you may put it out that way, to also gossip for the gossip columnists because it's Alice Walker.
Yes.
Do you think about that when you write about your mom?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm always trying to figure out how I can both tell my story and also protect people in my life. I tried that very hard with Black, White, and Jewish. Of course, you know, I thought I had protected everyone, and the response was that they felt I didn't protect them at all. So, you know, absolutely, you have to think about these things. But at the same time, in the same way that my mom is a writer, and she told many truths that many people were vehemently against, I don't know if any of you out there remember the, you know, the torrential storms of resistance to my mother's work at various points in her career. But like her, I have had to be steadfast against all kinds of criticisms, including the one we just got, that I'm just a spoiled brat who had lots of access and privilege. It's quite easy in some ways to get your foot in the door. It's very difficult to manage a 15-year career just on the basis of being someone's daughter, just FYI. But yes, it's something that I consider quite often every day when I face the blank screen.
We're really out of time, but I have to ask if you have a reaction to John and Elizabeth Edwards staying in the presidential race and the public reaction to that.
What has the public reaction
been? Well, I mean, I think there have been two different reactions. One is the public reaction, which has been overwhelmingly positive from what I can tell.
Uh-huh.
Then there's the media reaction, which tells us that we're in a national division over it, with some people knocking her as not being devoted enough to her two small children in what may turn out to be the last few years of her life. And I'm sure there are some people who feel that way.
Well, I think that relationships are very complex and that they seem to love each other and their children very, very much. And I think that they are probably making the best decision that they can for everybody involved. It's obviously not an easy decision to make, but I, you know, I'm not one to throw stones at a woman who has just been told her cancer has returned. You know what I mean? And I've always been impressed by the love that they seem to have and their ability to suffer tremendous hardship and still come out with a positive outlook, not just for their family, but for the country at large.
Rebecca Walker, her new book is called Baby Love, Choosing Motherhood After a Lifetime of Ambivalence. It is published by Riverhead Books. Thank you very, very much.
You're so welcome, Brian. I'm so glad you decided to have me on instead of, you know, capitulate to the pressures.
And if people want to come and make you not capitulate in person, I gather tonight. Is that tonight?
Oh, no, that was last night.
Oh, that was last night. Tonight in Philadelphia. I have this Barnes & Noble, Walnut Street at 7:30.
Yes.
We have some listeners down there.
And
so
people can also write to me on my website, www.rebeccawalker.com.
And speaking of babies, we will talk about the new baby demographic in Manhattan. Let's just say they don't call them Pampers for nothing. Stay tuned.